be with you. Hope everyone had a pleasant afternoon, and glad that we can be back together this evening and worship God. I'd like to direct your attention this evening to this passage of Scripture in Acts, the third chapter. The Apostle Peter, as he is coming to a climax in his message in this chapter, speaks about Jesus, the Christ appointed for you, whom heaven must receive until the period of restoration of all things, about which God spoke by the mouth of his holy prophets from ancient time. You may recall a few weeks ago, I talked about this passage, and Sunday morning gave part one to this sermon where we were focusing our attention upon what this passage means when it talks about the period of restoration of all things. And I gave part one, and I announced that we would have part two that evening, and this is very hard, I know, for you to believe. I forgot it was singing night. Shocking that I would forget that. And so I couldn't preach part two. I had to leave for a meeting then. And I had a week-long meeting, came back, forgot I had never preached part two. And then one of you kind souls reminded me this week I had never preached part two. And it was so cute in the email. Just, you know, can you tell me when you're going to preach part two of that lesson? You know, kind of how many months down the road will it be? Tonight is the night. And I appreciate that reminder. This is, I think, a very important passage. And it's one that is really at the very fundamental level of what the gospel is. Peter is not preaching this message to some group of mature Christians. This is very fundamental. This is very basic teaching. And yet, it tends to be the kind of thing that we don't really appreciate. Sometimes you ask people, what is the gospel all about? What is our hope? What are we looking forward to? And people would just say, well, to go to heaven. And, well, I agree with that. I mean, you know, I'm all for going to heaven. But I think sometimes we have a very small picture of what God's overall purpose and plan really is. And we may think that, well, Jesus died so I could go to heaven. It's so much more than that. And if you really understand what the Old Testament prophets were talking about, as Peter alludes to here, and what Jesus was bringing to fulfillment, as Peter is alluding to here, when we really understand all of that, it's this grand scheme of God, and we have the honor and the privilege to be participants in that. So I want to talk with you tonight about what Peter is talking about when he speaks about Jesus being in heaven now and us awaiting his return, which will mark that period of restoration of all things about which God spoke by the mouth of his holy prophets from ancient time. And if you do recall back, we had talked about this language of restoration. We think about the idea of restoration from exile, and certainly the Old Testament talks about that. The Old Testament talks about how God's nation of Israel that had been divided into two nations, Israel, the northern kingdom, and Judah, the southern kingdom, both of those nations fell away from God's law, and as a result went into exile. And so you then have the prophets during that divided monarchy period talking about that time when there would be a restoration from exile. And yet, as you go forward and look at what we oftentimes speak of as the era of restoration, the time of Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah, and we've recently had a class where we were talking about that period of time. If you think that period of time fulfills all that the prophets were talking about as the restoration, well, then you're dismissing it. Because the fact of the matter is that even though there was a restoration of the nation in the days of Zerubbabel and then later Ezra and Nehemiah, there was not a restoration of the kingdom, and there was not a fulfillment of all that God's prophets had been talking about. Those prophets said that ultimately there would come a time in the last days of this current age. In the last days, God would set up his kingdom. And that Messiah would come. And of course, we know it turned out to be Jesus of Nazareth who set up his kingdom. In these last days, the prophets had said, would be the time when God's kingdom would be set up. And ultimately, when it would reach its fulfillment, there would be this new age to come, a time of righteousness. It's a new heavens, a new earth where righteousness would dwell, and where all these things would be accomplished. And ultimately, there would be this restoration of the kingdom. And we talked about that last time in part one of this lesson, the idea that indeed Jesus did set up this kingdom. And so now you have this authoritative ruler on the throne of David, a restoration of that Davidic throne per that promise of God. And also, not just a restoration of the kingdom itself, but a reunification of Israel and Judah. And the prophets talked about how that divided monarchy period, which was not something God wanted to continue indefinitely, but rather ultimately in the last days, God's kingdom would be established, and all of God's people from all those tribes would all be submitting to that one Davidic king, and there would be unification again. And so here you have that concept, the restoration and reunification of that kingdom. We talked last time about the restoration of all the nations unto Yahweh's authority. And we've discussed this really in a lot of classes and looking at Old Testament prophets where there's something just wrong about the nations of the world who have no knowledge of Yahweh, yet He's the Creator. You talk about something being out of kilter. Things not being right. This is Yahweh's world. This is God's world. He made it. And yet you've got all these nations who are not serving Him. And so ultimately the prophets talked about how one day, not just those who were of the biological seed of Abraham, but all the Gentiles, all the nations would bow the knee to Yahweh. Every knee would submit to Him. And ultimately all that is part of God's plan, all that being accomplished by this great kingdom that Jesus set up in the last days. A restoration of all the exiles. And this kind of brings me up now to what I call part two of all this. Because when you think about that restoration movement of Zerubbabel and Ezra and Nehemiah, as good as it was and as marvelous as it was just a remnant of God's people. In fact, the prophets talked about that, just a remnant. And yet God's promises had been that He would one day restore all of His people who were in exile. Going back to the days of Moses itself, the very earliest time of the nation, when Moses had foretold that God would judge His sinful people and take them into exile, he also talked about deliverance from exile, restoration from exile. He said in Deuteronomy 30 verse 3, "Then the Lord your God will restore you from captivity. If your outcasts are at the ends of the earth, from there the Lord your God will gather you. And from there He will bring you back. And the Lord your God will bring you into the land which your fathers possessed, and you shall possess it, and He will prosper you and multiply you more than your fathers." And lest there be any doubt about what God's intention was in all of this, Jeremiah chapter 23, he gives this prophecy, sort of harking back to the words of Moses. He's speaking for God, says, "Then I myself shall gather the remnant of my flock out of all the countries where I have driven them, and shall bring them back to their pasture, and they will be fruitful and multiply. Behold, the days are coming, declares the Lord, when I shall raise up for David a righteous branch, and he will reign as king and act wisely. In his days Judah will be saved, and Israel will dwell securely." The very words of this prophecy, they're not fulfilled by that restoration movement that took place in the 5th century B.C. That was just a small amount of God's people that restored the nation, but the fullness of this prophecy isn't accomplished. There are still God's people who are in exile. And so ultimately, Jeremiah looked ahead and said, when that Davidic king would come, when that descendant of David would come and would inaugurate his kingdom, ultimately what that would bring about is a time when all of those exiles, no matter where they are, all of those who have been punished, all of those who are in a state of exile and punishment, they're all going to be brought back and everything is going to be set right again. And this prophecy ultimately is something that we're still, in a sense, we're still looking forward to. I think it's real clear. It's not talking about some premillennial kind of idea, but it is talking about in that new heavens and new earth, there's a restoration of all God's people. And we'll have more to say about that in just a moment. Restoration of all the exiles, but when you think about that concept, those exiles, it's not just a matter of them being physically cast out of the promised land. There's a symbolism to all that. Being ripped from the promised land was an act of judgment. Living as exiles was an act of judgment. It signified the sinfulness of God's people, a people that needed to be righteous again. And so the idea of restoration, it carries with it that component of forgiveness and righteousness. And yet, what we also need to see about all of this is that it demands the idea that God's people in the last days are going to be people who will be serving Him, and they will be serving Him from their heart. And this is another wonderful aspect of this. You know, when you think about what the Bible is talking about, the problem of sin, it's a problem of the hearts of people who aren't dedicated to God. That's what caused the Assyrian exile, the Babylonian exile. But all of that just symbolized the spiritual problem, not just that the Jewish nation had, but that all human beings had. Where hearts are not dedicated to Yahweh, they're not serving Yahweh. And this idea of restoration, how could it really fully accomplish all of God's plans unless the hearts of people are restored back to God? Unless you've got people who are now going to be serving God in the last days and serving Him from their heart and doing what is right, not simply because they have been forced to by some God who's so powerful, like some military power coming in and through coercion forcing people to be submissive, but no, people who from their heart bow the knee to God and serve Him because He is God. And because by right He is God. By right He deserves our service. And so what you see are the Old Testament prophets talking about that. In the last days, God's plan would bring about the change of people's hearts. Malachi 4 talks about the beginning of all this. Malachi 4 verse 5, the last of the Old Testament prophets are among the last of those Old Testament prophets speaking for the Lord. He says, "Behold, I'm going to send you Elijah the prophet before the coming of the great and terrible day of the Lord. And he will restore the hearts of the fathers to their children and the hearts of the children to their fathers, lest I come and smite the land with a curse." Malachi in this grand prophecy looks ahead toward the last days, before that time when God would have to come in judgment upon the nation of Israel and upon all nations. He talks about, before that would happen, Elijah coming and beginning to restore the hearts of people back to God. Do you know who he's talking about in this prophecy? Jesus said in Matthew 17 to his disciples, he said this. He answered and said, "Elijah is coming and will restore all things." He's harking back to that prophecy in Malachi that we just read. "Elijah is coming," Jesus said, "and will restore all things. But I say to you that Elijah already came, and they did not recognize him, but did to him whatever they wished. So also the Son of Man is going to suffer at their hands." And then verse 13 says, "Then the disciples understood that he had spoken to them about John the Baptist." You see, what Jesus is getting at is that John the Baptist was this Elijah that Malachi 4 was talking about, some prophet that God would send before that great and terrible day of judgment to try to bring the hearts of the people of Israel back to God. And that's what Elijah was doing. Elijah, of course, came on the scene preaching that message, "Repent, for the kingdom of heaven is at hand." Everything's about to dawn, and so now's the time for repentance. And Jesus says, that's who Elijah is. He's the fulfillment of that, someone who came in the spirit and power of Elijah of old, just like Elisha had come in the spirit and power of Elijah, his predecessor. Well, John the Baptist came in the spirit and power of Elijah the prophet of old, and he was preaching repentance to his people and trying to turn the hearts of these children of Israel back to that childlike heart of trusting in God. And yet, there's something else here. Jesus reminds his disciples that they didn't accept John the Baptist's message, at least most didn't. And even Jesus himself, they weren't going to accept. And even the Son of Man, he says, is going to suffer at their hands. So the hearts are not fully restored by the efforts of John the Baptist. But you know, if you go back to the Old Testament prophets like Ezekiel 36, they talked about one day, though. In those last days, one day everything would be accomplished, and you're going to have a people who really have their hearts turned back to God fully. Ezekiel 36, verse 26, I will give you a new heart, God says, and put a new spirit within you, and I will remove the heart of stone from your flesh and give you a heart of flesh, and I will put my spirit within you and cause you to walk in my statutes, and you will be careful to observe my ordinances, and you will live in the land that I gave to your forefathers, so you will be my people, and I will be your God. You see what God was talking about? Not just a restoration of the kingdom in some political sense or some governmental sense. Not just all the nations bowing down to Yahweh in some kind of a coercion sense, but instead God talked about in the last days, there's going to be a people that God prepares and His Spirit is going to be in. That's going to be the Spirit that is in them and that is directing them. And they're going to be doing righteous things. They're not going to have this kind of hard heart like the people of Israel and Judah had that caused them to be sent into exile. Instead, they're going to have a compliant heart. And that spirit of rebellion that they had, it's going to be replaced by a new spirit. And look at the imagery that he uses. God says, my spirit's going to be in them. And I'll make them walk in my commandments. You know, you look at that prophecy and you kind of think, well, the way he words that almost seems like he's talking about the Spirit of God possessing people and taking control of them so that they then do righteous things and they don't do sinful things. Is that what he's talking about? Well, yeah, in a sense. Now, he's not talking about somehow the Spirit of God against a person's will, supernaturally taking over a person so he's some kind of a robot or something, or he's in a trance, and the Spirit of God now makes him do certain things and makes him not do other things that would be sinful. It isn't that kind of a supernatural thing, but yet the language that is used, it's language that very forcefully talks about, wouldn't it be wonderful if in the last days there would be a people who would be serving God and serving Him from their heart, and the Spirit that directs them, it's not this spirit of sin that they've allowed to take possession of their hearts and their lives, but instead it would be a spirit of, well, God Himself. The same attitudes God has about sin, well, that's what His people have. The same desire to do what is right that God's Spirit has, that's how His people act. Because it's God's Spirit that is, so to speak, dwelling in them and motivating them, and it's the spirit of righteousness that they're trying to serve, not the spirit of sinfulness. And that's what the prophets talked about. And so the idea here is that one day in the last days, there would be not just a kingdom, but a kingdom where you've got the citizens of that kingdom who really serve God and do what is right from their heart. And it started with John the Baptist preparing the hearts of the people, but then Jesus, ultimately in his teaching, carries that on further. And yet, like Jesus predicted, they're going to cause the Son of Man to suffer just like they did John the Baptist. They're going to turn against me. But yet Jesus was saying to his apostles when he commissioned them to send them out into all the world, you make disciples of all the nations. And he had them start with the Jewish people. And the gospel was first preached to them, but also to those of us who are Gentiles. And God was looking for hearts who would allow God's Spirit to reign in them. Again, not in some kind of miraculous sense, but in that moral sense. People who would allow God's Spirit to control them and rule them, and they do what the Spirit of God would want done. And they think with the attitude of the Spirit of God and not with some spirit of sin or of Satan. And that's what the gospel is all about. And ultimately, what we need to see is the reason why Peter could talk about this age to come being a new heavens and new earth where righteousness dwells. It's because that's who those people are. And the Church of Jesus Christ, that's what we are. And we're awaiting this new heavens and new earth where everything has been set right. But we're serving God from the heart, and that service is beginning now. And that's why we can have confidence that we are the people of God. As Paul said in Romans chapter 8, if the Spirit of God is what we are allowing to dwell in us now, then we can have confidence that that same Spirit by which we put to death these sinful things, that same Spirit of God will one day resurrect us from the dead into His eternal kingdom, the new age to come, just like the Spirit of God raised Jesus from the dead. Because it's that Spirit that we're allowing to rule over us, just like Ezekiel 36 said. And so it's a marvelous, marvelous thing. This is what God's trying to accomplish. And I'll tell you one other thing. This great kingdom of the last days, it will be a restoration of Yahweh and His people. A bringing back together of God and His people. You know, when you look at the very opening pages of the Bible, what do you see? You see God in fellowship and harmony with man in the Garden of Eden. It's a paradisical existence. It's a wonderful kind of existence. And yet what happens? Sin just corrupts everything. And so God is now separated from His sinful people who have rebelled against Him. And all of us as human beings, we've all followed in the sin of Adam, and we've just carried that on. And so what do we see throughout human history? We see this breach between God and His people. That's why we walk by faith in this heavenly God, not by sight, because He's not here with us on earth walking in some form in the garden like He was with Adam and Eve. But you know, when you think about the nation of Israel and the whole system of the Mosaic system and the tabernacle, what's the symbolism of all that? Well, it's Yahweh dwelling with His people, and they're in unity. And so to speak, the presence of God is there in that Holy of Holies, and where is the Holy of Holies? Well, it's there in the center of the camp as they're traveling through the wilderness. It's in the center of their nation when they're planted then in the Promised Land, and so God is there with His people, and yet the whole point of their going into exile is that the Spirit of God leaves that temple. And as the prophet said, the Spirit of God left the temple and crossed the Mount of Olives, and the people go into exile. And so now there's this separation of God and His people. It's the horrible events of Genesis 3 all over again, where sin has destroyed that idyllic arrangement of God and His people in paradise. And now there's a breach in all that. And so the prophets talked about a restoration one day when the kingdom has come and the kingdom has been established and everything has been set right, and you've got the hearts of people who are now allowing the Spirit of God to dwell in them, and they're serving God and doing what is right. Well, guess what? The ultimate point in all this plan is a restoration of Yahweh and His people. And that's what Isaiah 25 is talking about. What a marvelous prophecy this is. Isaiah looks ahead toward that day when one day we would be united together with God in that eternal kingdom, the new heavens and new earth. He says, Isaiah 25 verse 6, "The Lord of hosts will prepare a lavish banquet for all peoples on this mountain. On this mountain He will swallow up the covering which is over all peoples, even the veil which is stretched over all nations. He will swallow up death for all time. And the Lord God will wipe tears away from all faces and remove the reproach of his people from all the earth. What a marvelous, marvelous promise. Ever since the casting out of human beings from Eden, we are mortal beings. Death is a reality. It's this pall that just hangs over us. It is something that just is stretched out over all of us. Death is what we all fear, our own mortality. And it is that punishment for sin, it signifies our separation from that living God. And so we are these sin-filled mortal beings, and yet the promise is one day. One day death will be destroyed. Death will be no more. God is going to be reunited with his people, and he himself will wipe every tear from our eyes, and there will be a lavish banquet and celebration. And it is that which Jesus was talking about in Matthew 8 and verse 11 when he said, "And I say to you that many shall come from east and west and recline at the table with Abraham and Isaac and Jacob in the kingdom of heaven." What a glorious thing. How in the world can we possibly all be at the banquet table and celebrate this great victory with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob? They're long since dead. Oh, but that's the point. Death is no more. Death is swallowed up. There's a resurrection from the dead, and God's righteous ones are all resurrected into this citizenry of his kingdom in the new age. And we'll sit at the banquet table with all the patriarchs of old and all of those who've been serving God and serving his son Jesus Christ from all time. And we're all sitting unified and rejoicing with Jesus and God himself. That's what it's all about. Do you appreciate this statement that Jesus made in Matthew 26 when he established the Lord's Supper? We quote it a lot. I don't think we understand it properly, though, in my judgment. When Jesus established the Lord's Supper, he said in verse 27, or the text says, "When he had taken a cup and given thanks, he gave it to them, saying, 'Drink from it, all of you. For this is my blood of the covenant, which is poured out for many for the forgiveness of sins.'" Watch it now. "But I say to you, I will not drink of this fruit of the vine from now on until that day when I drink it new with you in my Father's kingdom." And I know ever since I was a little kid, I've heard preachers preach on this, and I myself used to preach this. Well, it has to be a nice passage to use against the premillennialists, you know, who think the church is the kingdom, and you can say that, you know, he's talking about when we take the Lord's Supper every Sunday, that Jesus is, in a sense, with us as we take the Lord's Supper. Well, okay, yeah, there's a sense, sure, that Jesus is with us when we partake of the Lord's Supper. That's not what he's talking about in this context, though. We're not reading the passage in context. Now, what has Jesus been talking with his disciples about all during the earlier verses here of Matthew's Gospel? He's been talking with them about the fact that he's leaving them. He's going to his heavenly throne. He's returning to his Father. And his Father is, of course, in heaven, separated from us, his people. And Jesus is going to be separated from his disciples until when? Until every enemy has been defeated, even death itself, and Jesus returns to resurrect us from the dead into that heavenly kingdom where we will have that banquet and feast with God together in his presence. And together with Jesus again. And what we need to understand, the Lord's Supper is a memorial meal that doesn't just look backward to the sacrifice of Jesus on the cross. It also looks forward to that celebratory meal that Isaiah 25 talked about, that we just read about. That lavish banquet. That celebratory banquet where it's the victory. And we sing about that. Faith is the victory. But that's when it's all going to be realized. And that's when we're going to be unified with God again. And we're there together with Him in that new heavens and new earth where righteousness dwells. And we're in His presence and we're serving Him. And He is our God and everything is right. And there is no more sin. And there is no more death. And there is no more of what we see in this world now where people don't honor God. Aren't you sick of it? Aren't you sick of fighting with all the garbage that's on TV and all the garbage in the movies and how it affects not just your kids and not just the people around you? It affects you too. Aren't you sick of all that? Don't you long for that time when everything is going to be restored and everything is set right and we can be with God again? That's what it's all about. And so we need to understand that ultimately this great promise of God, it's about the restoration of God and His people. And we're together with Him. And we're no longer sinful people who deserve to be separated from Him, but by the blood of His Son, we've been made righteous, and the Spirit of God is what controls us, and we're serving Him and doing what is right. And that's what it's all about. And the whole point of that, brethren, is that it's for us, this is all beginning now. See, for us, this is all beginning now. Jesus has already started the kingdom. It hasn't reached its fulfillment in the fullest sense yet. But we've got one foot in this world, but another foot already in the world to come. That's what it means for us as Christians. And we're living with a different hope and a different goal and a different encouragement and excitement about doing what is right that this world has no clue about. And that's what God's promises are all about. And so we need to understand that this is what Peter was getting at as he's just teaching people for the first time, fundamental teaching about the restoration of all things. Think about it again. Peter talked with them about Jesus the Christ appointed for you, whom heaven must receive until the period of restoration of all things about which God spoke by the mouth of His holy prophets from ancient time. Somebody says, well, what's your hope? Yeah. I want to go to heaven. I want to die. Go to heaven. Well, yeah. But do you see why I say it's so much more than that? It's so much more to this than that. And people out there in the world, you know, they don't get it. You know, you Christians, what, you just wanting to, okay, you die and then you get to go to heaven. Okay, you know, they don't get all this. And maybe we can teach them. And God help us to teach them and help us to instruct them so they can begin to understand and grasp this glorious promise. But you and I have the chance to be part of that. God's eternal scheme. This is it. And we're the beneficiaries of all this. And it's a wonderful, wonderful thing. This world in which we live, it's still corrupt. The restoration events, I mean, there's, of course, some preliminary things that have already taken place. It hasn't yet reached its fruition yet. But it's coming. It's coming. And Jesus will be in heaven until the period of restoration of all things, and then He'll come and get us, and everything will be as it should be. And so, if you tonight are excited about God's promise and are overwhelmed with the graciousness of God and overwhelmed with your sinfulness, but if you see that God is willing to forgive you, and that's what this plan is about in large part, and if you're willing to submit your life to Him tonight and be baptized into Jesus Christ, or if you've been an erring disciple, for goodness sake, make that correction tonight. And be righteous with and right with God and make God's Spirit welcome and at home in your heart and directing you. And let that all happen starting tonight as we await the return of our great King, where we can finally be with Him and the Father for all eternity. If you're here tonight, can we assist you in making your life right with God? Won't you come? While together we stand and sing this.